Scripture reading today is from the book of Matthew, chapter 7, verses 7 through 12. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you, when his sons ask for a loaf, give him a stone? Or when he asks for a fish, will not give him a snake, will he? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask him? In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, for this is the law of the prophets.
I want to thank Andy for that reading this morning. And we are, we're rapidly coming to the close of this series of Sermon on the Mount topics, but I probably began this back when we were still sweating when we went outside and so forth. So it's actually been a little while, but I think there's just probably one more and then we'll be done. But Jesus is also here bringing the Sermon on the Mount to a conclusion. And in doing so, he's been describing the standards or the conditions for being able to live in the kingdom. And if you remember when I was here 2 weeks ago, I talked about the first six verses in which he was talking about how we are to not treat others. We're not to use false standards of judgment. We're not to judge others differently than we're judging ourselves, and that we are not to just be hypocritical towards each other. And so here in verses 7 through 12, Jesus is kind of transitioning to give us a picture of how we should treat each other, how we should treat each other in love and respect. And the first six verses, you know, like I said, talked about how not to act. Well, these verses are going to tell us how we should act to, you know, towards each other. Verse 7 that Andy read there said, ask and it will be given to you, seek and ye shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. Jesus has been in this discussion about the kingdom and is talking about that we need to be seeking it. And he kind of brings it to an eventual conclusion, but he's talked about, you know, we shouldn't worry about what we are going to eat or what we're going to wear. And we talked about that a month or so ago. God knows what we need, and because of that, he's going to make sure that we have it. Now, it might not be in the abundance that we want or anything like that, but I don't think any of us here probably slept outside last night and so forth. I mean, he does give us what we need because he knows that we're seeking the kingdom, and he is going to look after those that do. Now, it's important for us to keep this verse here in context so no one tries to lift it out and use it for any other purpose. But we have to make sure that when it's used or when people try to use this for justifying the Lord didn't answer my prayers or anything, we have to keep it in mind of what is being said here. We are people that he was speaking to would be people that, remember, are seeking the kingdom, that are trying to live righteously and not being hypocritical towards each other and so forth. And so we are wanting to be in the kingdom and we're wanting God's will to be done. But with those in mind, I want you to notice that Jesus is teaching us to be persistent, that the payoff or the answering of the prayers might not necessarily be right away. He tells us to, he asks us to ask, he asks us to seek, and he asks us to knock. And so these are, just shows there's a progression that may be necessary. And so he's saying, ask God for the things that you have on your mind, that you feel that you need. And so just simply he's saying, ask. Seeking, we need to seek God and his righteousness. We need to, if we're looking for him, then he's willing to help us. And then knocking, is a great analogy here, that it's if we're outside of the kingdom wanting in and we're needing to persistently knock so that he will open the door, invite us in. So we're supposed to ask God, we're supposed to seek God, and we're supposed to knock on the door for him to let us in. And we don't need to go too far to find out why he's saying what he's saying. Verse 8 tells us that if we ask, seek, and knock, he says that we will receive it. Just Jesus tells us to expect to receive what it is that we ask of God. But Jesus doesn't just end this discussion here and just say that we need to ask God more, that Jesus does not simply tell us just to pray more. Jesus is giving us great encouragement to come to God in prayer. He's encouraging us to have that relationship, that conversation with God. And he tells us that if we come to him and we are seeking him and we have that attitude, then we should expect that we will be able to receive something from him. As we go into verses 9 and 10, where it talks about, you know, who's going to, if your child asks you for bread, you're not going to give him a stone, or a fish, you're going to give him a serpent. And so I'm not a parent, but parents, I'm sure if your child asks you for bread, you may tell him to wait till supper time or something like that, but you're not going to give him something that's of no use to him. And, you know, I don't know how many of your kids today ask you for a fish, maybe a fish sandwich at McDonald's. You're not going to give them a serpent sandwich. You'll treat them the way they want. And parents should be not giving, well, parents shouldn't be giving their children these things. People shouldn't be neglecting their children that way. And I thought the best analogy I can think of, the ones that don't, usually you see like on a Dateline NBC or some crime show of where they've been treating their kids horribly, and now after, you know, years of neglected abuse, you're seen. It doesn't have to be at that level for it to be noticed, but basically, if you want to be, you know, if you don't want to be mistreated or neglected from the Lord, then that's how we have to treat those in our life that we can impact. And in verse 11, it says, if you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? And so we all are sinful people in a sense that we've all fallen short of the glory. But he's saying, even us in a sinful state that we have found ourselves in our lives, we know how to treat others, especially our children, properly. We know how to give them the right gifts, the proper gifts. And so if we, who are imperfect, can treat our children that way, why would we not have the expectation that the Lord, who is perfect, is going to look after us and provide to us? He has unlimited goodness, and he is able to provide for us. And really, we should find comfort and we should find encouragement in these words. I know in my prayer life, I'm like, you know, maybe I shouldn't ask for that. Well, that's for the Lord to decide, but we should ask. And so he's not ignorant of what it is that we need. And if we're asking for, Andy knows I've been researching a new vehicle. And now if I pray to the Lord that he provides for a Lamborghini, I don't think that's probably going to be answered, because he knows what it is that I need, not what I want. Well, he knows what I want as well, but I don't think he's going to make the strings work out that I'm going to be able to go buy that expensive car. He knows what we need, and he's not, I don't know if you want to say impotent, he is able to give us what we would want. He has the capability of providing to us, and he's not malevolent. He's not looking to harm us. He's not looking to cause us disappointment or so forth. And it's because of that loving nature that he has. And so if we don't treat our children that way, he's not going to treat us that way. And so we should be comforted by the understanding or this knowledge of that he is a loving God, and that he is wanting the best for us, and that he doesn't lack the power to do it. He's not looking for a way to take advantage of us or to disappoint us. He's a loving God, and he is wanting to provide for us what it is that we need. And so he simply says, ask, seek, and knock. And so Jesus tells us that God will answer and give us what we need, so we just need to keep asking, seeking, and knocking. And we should find comfort in that, that he is able to provide that. And then that brings us here to verse 12, which is frequently called the golden rule. And it's interesting. The first word of verse 12, depending upon your version, I went and looked, and generally it's either so or therefore. And so that means this is a culmination of these thoughts, or a summing up, or a conclusion that he's making here. So he's saying so or therefore. And so what he's saying is, because of what God has done for us and having this loving nature for us, that we should do unto others as we would have them do unto us. And God's kindness and his benevolence should lead us to have benevolence and kindness towards our friends and our colleagues and especially among each other here. And so it's interesting that probably most people in the world, or at least, you know, that in this country, they've heard of the golden rule, and they probably can cite it. They may not know that it came from God's word, but they're familiar with the concept: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But I think probably as we look around the world, it's not practiced that much. It's hardly practiced at all. What I think actually is put into practice is that people are more likely to do unto others what they've done to you. I'm going to get them back. I'm not going to let this stand. I think that's more of the attitude that we find ourselves facing in this world. But if people did practice the golden rule and didn't just be able to recite it, but actually lived it, I think our world would be a much different place. There would be, I don't know how you could have wars if you're wanting to have others do what they do to you. I didn't know how I wanted to work this in, but I heard a long time ago that the truest sign of doing unto others as you would have them do to you is put an unsliced pizza in front of you, and you're going to split it with a friend. And you say, here, you slice up the sizes. And you're like, oh, I'm going to slice the bigger size and leave them with the smaller size. But the flip is, after you slice it, they then get to choose the slice that is. So you're going to make sure it's pretty much right down the middle. And so that's an attitude to do unto others you would have them do unto you. You know that in that case, it's going to be an immediate payoff on that practice. But if everybody in this world did unto others as you would want them to do unto you, it would be certainly a much different world that in which we would live. The world would be radically different if they would just follow this one command. But we all could see how great the world would be, but like I mentioned, but it isn't something that's followed. And the reason why is that most people don't look out for each other. They're self-centered, they're self-absorbed, they're looking out only for the benefit, what can benefit themselves. And that is the prevailing attitude in this world. They refuse to think about others and only focus on themselves. And so when we think about ourselves, we are maybe potentially harming someone else. If we're only thinking about ourselves, someone else might be inflicted or be at a disadvantage. And our culture, I don't know, is unable to see it. They're just unwilling to make that change. But if we do unto others as we would want them to do for us, then there would be, it's like the mutually assured destruction when you heard back in the 80s when nuclear war was on everyone's mind. It didn't happen because the other side knows that they would do unto them what they did to them. But that's why this command can't sit in isolation. You can't just pull this command out and use it out of context and really expect it to work. The reason we don't is because it is rooted in a reason that why should I do for others as I would want them to do for me? But the answer should not be really intended to have a selfish outcome. It should not be something that we are looking to manipulate the other person. If I do this for them, maybe they'll do something nice for me. That's a human concept or a human approach to this. We shouldn't be doing things to expect a kindness in return. We can't be doing this expecting, well, I'll do this for them, and I know they really don't need it, but they maybe feel obligated. Let's invite the Smiths over for dinner, because we've really been wanting to go over to their house and see what stuff they have behind that. You know, you can't have that type of attitude. If you're only inviting the Smiths over for dinner, is that you're hoping you get an invite in return, then you're not really showing kindness. And I understand that's a kind of a strange, but I think it's probably a real world type approach to this. And so when we do something and hoping for kindness to be reciprocated, and it doesn't, well, then it could cause hardships, and it could cause hard feelings, I should say, between each other. And so you shouldn't be doing things only hoping that there's a payoff for you at the end. Many relationships are broken down, whether that's a romantic relationship, a friendship, whatever the case may be. But if only one person is really interested in doing things for the other, and the other one just keeps taking advantage, those relationships over time tend to break down. So the motivation for doing to others what we want them to do for us is what we find in verses 7 through 11. That God is a benevolent, loving Father for us. And He loves us, and He is going to not take advantage of us. He's not going to do something expecting us to do something in return for Him that will benefit Him selfishly in that case. And so He's saying, because of the Heavenly Father that's going to do this for you, then you need to do this to others. This is something that you now need to go and do and provide to others because of what the Lord will do to us. And so God's love is our motivation here. The fact that He loves us should spur us into love for others. We don't want to. We do not do for others so that people will do for us. That is a total misapplication and a misunderstanding of what Jesus is teaching here. This command is compelling us to deal with others by beginning with ourselves. We do not get to determine the treatment of others just by looking at them, making a judgment on them. We shouldn't have stipulations. Well, they don't deserve this. They've got enough already. That's not what we're being told to do here. We're not supposed to make calculations and see what they do or do not deserve. Rather, we start with ourselves and ask, what would we want, and have that need, and then go and do that for the other person when it's appropriate. Now, Jesus, what He's done here is using our self-interest that is just, you know, in our human nature. And He's commanding us to use it to treat others graciously instead of selfishly. But we'll notice here how verse 12 ends here. And He says, For this is the law and the prophets. Jesus calls this command to do for others as we would have them do for us. He's saying this is at the very heart of the law and the prophets. This command is at the heart of the kingdom and really mirrors the heart of God, the love that He has. We should be a reflection of that. And so this is what the law of Moses was teaching and what the prophets were preaching. God said, love your neighbor as yourself in Leviticus 19, verse 18. Not too unlike what He says here in verse 12 in chapter 7. It's a concept that was not new that Jesus was teaching here, but just like our world today, I'm sure He felt the need to bring it up and to reflect upon it, because they weren't acting that way. They weren't treating each other as you would yourself. This has been God's message for a long time. It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't anything new. But the fact that God sent His Son to die for us just adds another layer of why we should be willing to adopt this into our life. We should look at what God has accomplished for us through that death on the cross of His Son, that we have that path to a heavenly home for eternity. And so we should be drawn to Him because of that love that He showed for us. And He's saying, you should ask Me, you should seek out, and you should knock. He's inviting us to come to Him, but it has to be through the love of Him and for each other. He gives good gifts to his children. Now we are being commanded here to go and do the same. When people come to us and ask, we should give an answer. When they seek, we should help them find. And if they knock, we should be, well, literally, we should be open to opening the door. And that is what we're being taught here. That when we are able to help others, when we're provided that opportunity to help others or give unto others, then that's what we should do. We didn't talk about it, but Jesus mentioned about being lights of the world. Well, that's one way we can be a light of the world, by doing the opposite of what most people do and not acting selfishly and doing for others that we would want them to do for us. Mike has the prayer, and after that, we will pause and then begin our class here very shortly.